I think we're recording, Isaac.
What?
I think we're recording. Should we try it? Here's the theme tune.
Yeah.
Great choice of theme music, Isaac.
You're welcome.
Let's see where it goes. Let's listen to it for a little while. I like it.
Thanks. I like it as well.
All right, cool. Should we start?
Let's go.
All right, amazing. So, welcome to Great Gigs That Changed the World, a podcast with me, Adam Burkett, age 42.
And me, Isaac Burkett, age 10.
Nice. So, Isaac and I spend a lot of our time watching cool YouTube videos and gigs and talking about music, don't we?
Yeah.
And listening to lots of music. And we thought that it would be a really fun idea for us to make a little podcast to talk about some of the most iconic shows, music performances of all time. Talk about why they were so iconic, talk about why we like them, and talk maybe a little bit about the facts and the circumstances that made these shows happen.
And today we're going to be talking about Queen at Live Aid, 13th of July 1985.
That's it. And it was a beautiful hot summer's day, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So why did we choose this one as our first episode?
Well, for one reason, it was one of the most iconic rock gigs of all time.
Yeah.
And they weren't expecting it until about a month before the show, were they?
No, so they got a late call, didn't they?
Yeah, really late call.
So should we talk a little bit about what Live Aid was to start off with?
Yeah.
So I've done a bit of research. Have you done any research about Live Aid?
I've done a little bit of research.
So what do you know about Live Aid?
Live Aid was formed in 1985 by a bloke named Bob...
Geldof.
Yeah.
And his mate. Do you know his mate?
No.
Midge Ure.
Okay.
And they were both musicians and they worked together.
Queen raised over £1 million for their 20-minute performance at Live Aid.
More than that, I'm sure. So in total, Live Aid.
Yeah.
So Live Aid had this most amazing. There was actually two concerts.
One in London and one in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and they happened simultaneously, exactly the same time.
Phil Collins played both of them, didn't he?
Which is pretty amazing. We'll talk about that later, actually, about how he did that. But the list of artists that performed at Live Aid, whether it was in Philadelphia or in London, was just like the who's who of popular and iconic music at the time in 1985. I wish I was only three when it happened. I would have loved to have gone to one of these concerts. But I remember watching it when I was about 10 and just being absolutely blown away. So Queen had a slot sort of in the evening, I think early.
It was 6:48, I think.
6:48.
Something like that.
That's very precise.
It said on the...
Oh, when we watched it.
Yeah.
So we've watched it a few times, haven't we?
Yeah.
So so Queen were asked to do it quite late and they agreed to do it. They went on after who?
Dire Straits.
Okay.
And went on before David Bowie.
So this amazing iconic performance from Queen, which was absolutely amazing, had to be followed by somebody amazing. Can you imagine trying to follow Queen at Live Aid?
That must be like a pretty hard role to play.
Yeah, totally. Unfortunately, it was David Bowie, who's one of the greatest artists of all time, in my opinion.
He did a song with Queen as well.
That's a good point. When did they write Under Pressure?
I think it was 1981.
Was it that early? So they could have actually performed it together then.
Yeah.
At Live Aid. I wonder why they didn't. Must have been a gap between us. Like Bowie must have just flown in for his show or something.
Yeah. When we watched it this morning, whilst we were prepping for the episode, we were. It said 9:50.
Yeah.
At and that's when David Bowie must have been performing.
9:50.
Yeah.
So a couple
of hours after.
Well, they must have had. No, I can't imagine that was the case because they had to squeeze in loads and loads of performances all through the day. So I think that might be wrong because I think Bowie was on straight after Queen. So I don't think there were big gaps.
So
and what was really challenging about the performances is that no one got to sound check, from what I've read. So they just got up on stage and, you know, they'd handed in their, you know, their technical team would have given the rider of what they want in terms of mix and all the rest of it to their engineer.
Yeah, and Queen had gotten angry with each other the previous year. And
about what?
How Freddie was creating his own solo album at the time with another band. And when the rest of Queen found out, they weren't very happy.
Well, do you want to know something about that?
What?
That's actually not true.
What?
That's just something that was in the movie.
Yeah.
So the truth is, Roger Taylor had already done solo projects. And Brian May had already done solo projects in the early 80s.
What about John Deacon?
Not John Deacon. John Deeks just kept it real with Queen. He didn't do anything else apart from Queen. As soon as Freddie died, John Deacon never played again with Queen. Oh, actually, that's not true. He did one song. He did, I think, These Are the Days of Our Lives.
No, it wasn't that. It was Only the Good Die Young.
Only the Good Die Young, yeah. And I think that's the last thing John Deacon did in terms of live performance with Queen. But he's still involved today as sort of like part of the management. And obviously, he co-wrote a lot of the songs and he manages a lot of the finances.
He wrote all the good ones like You're My Best Friend, Another One Bites the Dust.
Yeah. He wrote some classic Queen tunes, didn't he?
Yeah, but he didn't get lots of the credit. In the film, he got some of it.
Mm-hmm.
But
in real life, like, he's a bit quiet, a bit reclusive. He doesn't ever speak, really get seen in public or anything.
No one.
Unlike Roger Taylor and Ryan May, who you can see all the time, and they're still performing as Queen.
Yeah, but no one really knows where John Deacon is right now, do they?
I think he lives in London.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, in a very nice house with his family. His family are all grown up now. He'll be in his 70s now.
I thought he was like 73.
Yeah, something like that, I would think. So going back to this performance then. So they already done solo albums. So they weren't actually upset with each other. They hadn't fallen out. They'd actually just come off the back of a world tour, Queen.
Yeah.
Promoting one of their albums. I think it was Hot Space. Was it Hot Space? Let me just have a look. Anyway, one of their albums. So I should probably disclose at this point that I'm a massive Queen fan and you are too.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons we wanted to start with this particular topic and talk about the Live Aid show.
Definitely.
So let's go back to why. Why was Live Aid and Queen at Live Aid such an iconic show, do you think?
Well, what I was wanting to know is why it was so perfect.
Okay. So what do you think?
My theory is that it was so perfect because they in the movie there's a scene with them practicing
it for Live Aid.
Yeah, for Live Aid. This might not be true because it said it was in 1984. I don't think Live Aid was actually organized in 1984.
It probably was because it would take a long time to put something like that together.
Yeah, well, they definitely didn't know.
The Queen didn't know, I don't think. I think they were fairly last minute to the bill.
Yeah. They were probably like one of the latest acts.
Yeah.
Who were the acts that you know performed at
that? Well, should we have a quick look?
There's
loads.
I know that there was Led Zeppelin, Queen, Dire Straits, and Paul McCartney.
So let me tell you. So at London,
there
was some of these. All these acts at the time in 1985 were huge.
Definitely.
Some of them you won't know. Some of them that were big at the time, but didn't really stick around for very long.
Did Alice in Chains do it?
They might have done the
Philadelphia.
Alice in Chains, no. They weren't around in 1985, I don't think. Let's have a look. So, in London, you had, let's have a look, Coldstream Guard. Oh, so that's okay. So the main first act was Status Quo.
Oh, they were good.
They were ace. Status Quo still are ace. In fact, a friend of mine is the drummer.
Really?
Yeah. He's from Northwich. The drummer for Status Quo. Shout out to Leon Cave if he's listening. The Style Council, Boomtown Rats, Nick Kershaw and Dire Straits.
Oh, so good.
Adamant.
Mm-hmm.
Spandau Ballet.
Mm-hmm.
Elvis Costello.
Ooh.
Brian Ferry.
Ooh.
Paul Young.
Very good.
David Bowie.
Ooh.
Sting with Phil Collins on drums. Now, do you know much about Phil Collins?
I know a little bit. He was in a band.
What was the band?
I've forgotten the name because the last time I heard one of their songs, I was in year one.
It was Genesis.
Yeah. I've heard of Genesis. I'd just forgotten the name. I heard one song.
And he then had a very successful solo album, solo career as well.
Yeah, he did like You Can't Hurry Love. That was a 90s
single.
That's
true. Yeah, well done. So who else after Phil Collins? Then you had Queen.
Ooh.
Then we had obviously we've said David Bowie. Then U2, The Who.
The Who?
Elton John.
Ooh.
We love a bit of Elton.
Oh, definitely.
And I think Elton John might have closed. And then at the end, everybody came on.
Oh.
To do like a big finale thing. And I think they sang Feed the World.
Who was that by?
No, they didn't. That's a Michael Jackson song. What's the Christmas tune?
Wouldn't it have been great if Michael Jackson did?
Well, do you know an interesting fact? Michael Jackson and Prince were both due to play at Philadelphia and both didn't turn up.
What?
Yeah, I know. Mental, isn't
it? What?
So in Philadelphia, this is the list of artists who performed in the Philadelphia show.
Yeah.
Dire Straits. No, mm-hmm. That can't be right. Did they both do both? That would be phenomenal. Santana.
Pretty good.
Amazing. Don Johnson, Eric Clapton.
Ooh.
Dionne Warwick.
Ooh, she's amazing.
U2, Bryan Adams, The Who. So they did both as well.
Yeah, most of these people.
I didn't know this.
This is really confusing.
I mean, this is just Wikipedia. It could be entirely incorrect.
Yeah.
What else? The Four Tops.
Yeah.
Billy Ocean.
I love Billy Ocean.
Black Sabbath.
Ooh.
Judas Priest. David Bowie did both, apparently.
Whoa.
Kenny Loggins, he did Highway to the Danger Zone.
Mm.
Have I showed you that?
No.
It's an amazing 80s rock track. Duran Duran.
I've heard of them.
They're really cool. Run DMC. Simple Minds. Neil Young.
Ooh, he's
the
amazing.
Beach Boys.
Oh my gosh. This is just getting out of hand.
I'm not entirely convinced this is an accurate list. The Pretenders.
They're okay.
They're amazing. Chrissy Hynde is amazing. Right, we are going to listen to The Pretenders later.
I prefer Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, it's not a case of one or the other. Fleetwood Mac are amazing as well, but like The Pretenders are epic, I promise you. We'll listen to The Pretenders later. Madonna.
Ooh.
She was only just starting out in 1985.
She did Live 8, which was in 2004. Uh-huh. I know someone who went to Live 8, so shout out for James if you're listening.
James who?
I don't know, actually. I met him yesterday at Forest Club.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
A mate of yours?
He's an instructor.
Oh, right. He went to Live 8?
Yeah.
Cool. That's really cool. So Live 8 was like the follow-on, wasn't it? And they had loads of different... I remember Pink Floyd reunited for Live 8 after having not played together for years. And interestingly, Led Zeppelin reformed for Live Aid in 1985 because John Bonham, the drummer, died in 1980 and they split up, basically. They just stopped performing. And they were convinced to get back together for Live Aid. And guess who played drums for them?
Was it John Bonham's son, Jason Bonham?
No, he came back to play with Led Zeppelin like in 2007 when they reformed. They did a couple of shows in London in 2007, which I tried to get tickets for and I couldn't.
You went to see the Chili's in 2004, didn't you?
I did see the Chili's in 2004, yeah. And James Brown was supporting them. That was amazing.
Oh,
James Brown was incredible.
Bit of funk.
Yeah. Anyway, what was my question? Who was the drummer?
Yes.
For Zeppelin. It was Phil Collins.
Oh, I was about to say Phil Collins.
So there was lots of controversy around their performance because they weren't particularly well rehearsed.
Yeah.
And... I'm forgetting all the names of the members of Zeppelin.
Robert Plant.
So Robert Plant's voice wasn't great, and Jimmy Page's guitar was apparently a bit out of tune. And there's a bit of controversy because they said that Phil Collins hadn't learnt any of the songs, and Phil Collins said, "Well, I tried my best, but I couldn't hear anybody because the monitoring was rubbish because we didn't have a sound check, and I wanted to just leave the stage, but then everybody would have been talking about Phil Collins walks off stage during Led Zeppelin, so he just stayed on and tried to make the best of it. But apparently, it was an appalling performance, and I've never seen it because they never let anybody put it back on YouTube or license it to play it because it was just an appalling performance.
The tickets were pretty cheap back then, weren't they?
For Live Aid?
Yeah.
£25 with a £20 of that went towards the charity.
And what did the £5 of that do?
Well, I imagine it went to all the costs of actually putting the concert on.
I guess, yeah.
So it was at Wembley Stadium, which is no longer there. It's been replaced by a new stadium. The old Wembley Stadium is where it was. And do you know how many people were there?
I know this one. It's 72,000.
You know that because I told you before.
Yeah.
And do you know how many people were at the Philadelphia one?
89,000.
There we go. So that was the live numbers. But do you know how many people globally watched it on TV?
1.4 billion.
Which is, that equated at
almost
the time.
Almost 40% of the world.
Which is just amazing. Yeah. And that was why it was such an incredible platform for these bands to perform. So they were doing it for charity. They were doing it for good reasons, but it was also an opportunity for them to promote themselves and show the world how amazing it was. And that's what happened to Queen. So Queen get on stage after Dire Straits, amazing band.
Yeah.
Get on stage and then they have a 20-minute set, right? Same as everybody else. Yeah. You only get 20 minutes.
Equality.
How do you put together a set that's going to change the world, be iconic in 20 minutes? So what did they sing? What did they perform?
I had these down on my notes. Mm-hmm. So it was Bohemian Rhapsody.
So they opened with Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, then it was Radio Gaga, Hammer to Fall, Crazy Little Thing Called Love, We Will Rock You, and they ended with We Are the Champions of the World.
So at the time, that's probably, like, I mean, that's their greatest hits at the time, and, I guess, in some way.
Freddie did, like, a vocal warm-up with the entire crowd.
Oh, like the A-O. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which no one had seen before, apart from, unless you'd been to a Queen show.
Yeah.
He'd done it for years, but, like, it wasn't, it wasn't like that global platform.
He did it in Wembley, 1986.
So, yeah, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Yeah. So the actual show at Live Aid, they have 20 minutes. And they had to get on the stage without any warm-up, without any rehearse, without any sound check, and deliver in front of 72,000 people in the stadium and 1.4 billion people.
No pressure.
Can you imagine? Now, I'd be pretty nervous.
Yeah.
Do you reckon Freddie would be nervous?
Well, it was probably the biggest show that Queen had ever played.
Do you think he was nervous, though?
Definitely.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I don't think he would have been.
Really?
It's Freddie Mercury.
I know, but... he's Freddie Mercury, I know that. But he, relating back to his childhood, he was born in Zanzibar, which is now modern-day Tanzania.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't English, for those of you who didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And
why do you think that would make him nervous, though?
That would make him nervous because when he first came to England, when he was 14 years old, that's when he met Roger and Brian.
At school?
No.
Was it not college?
Not school. He was selling secondhand clothes.
What, at 14?
Yeah.
He met them that young?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They knew each other for a little bit. They weren't the best of friends.
Mm.
And then when Freddie was about... Queen started in 1970? Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
And so he would have been... He was born in 1946, so 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They formed a band after Freddie saw Roger and Brian playing in a band called Smile.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And Freddie sort of just really liked them as a band and wanted to sing with them, basically. And I'm not sure how much factual accuracy there is on the movie Bohemian Rhapsody. There's quite a lot of, they've used a bit of creative license to make a better feature.
It was executive produced by Brian May.
Yeah, I know, but, like, they sort of... molded the truth a little bit to make a nice film.
Yeah.
But yeah, coming back to the show then. So they did these, was it five songs or six songs?
Six.
Six
and
songs.
Seven if you include the...
AO thing.
Yeah.
And I always remember, Bohemian Rhapsody is one of the greatest songs of all time. Everybody knows it. It's iconic. And no one's ever done anything before or since. And particularly at the time, in the early 70s, to release a song, mid-70s, to release a song like that, and to put it out as a record, 6 minutes long and all the rest of it, was incredibly bold. Amazing vision from Freddie to write this operatic section in the middle of it and all the rest
Definitely.
Of it.
Definitely.
Really cool. So obviously, it was iconic to start the show with that, wasn't it?
Definitely.
Because everybody in that stadium, everyone watching around the world, would instantly know Bohemian Rhapsody at that moment in time. Same as if it was today, everybody would recognise it.
Yeah.
But the thing for me always gets me in the feels when I watch the Live Aid show from Queen is the beginning of the next song, Radio Gaga. Because you've got these big, long, ringing out chords and this iconic groove. And it was then that Freddie got up from the piano and walked to the front of the stage and started doing his thing.
When that happened... I first saw Queen at Live Aid when I was about 4 years old. When I first saw him getting up from the piano and the other guy giving him his mic, I thought, wow, he has such passion and such grace.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the thing for me that was amazing is he looked out over the stadium, 72,000 people, and could just start to connect. It's an incredible skill for a front man or someone who fronts a band to be able to connect with your audience when there's so many of you. It's easier if you're in like a little
definitely
club and there's only 20 people there. You can really almost see each individual.
Yeah.
When you've got 72,000 people, how do you connect with the person at the very back of the back tier as much as you're connecting with the person right at the front of the stage? And Freddie started to do it. And he did it because, well, in my opinion, he's the greatest frontman of any rock band of any ever of all time.
Yeah.
He was the master at it. He managed to connect all these people. And I remember that intro to Radio Gaga.
Yeah.
And then the chorus, when they start doing the claps. You know which bit I mean?
Yeah, Radio Gaga.
Yeah, exactly. And you looked out, and there's that iconic shot of Freddie at the front of the stage
so
with
iconic.
All of the people behind him, all clapping in unison.
When people think of Queen, I think that's definitely what they think of.
I think you're right. I think a lot of people will relate to that that moment of Radio Gaga and all the clapping. Because it brings people together. That's the beautiful thing about
music.
Rock shows and music, exactly, yeah. Is it brings people together. And singing together is an amazing, important thing for health and social health and bringing humans together. So when you put 72,000 people in a room, effectively, and get them all singing at the same time and clapping at the same time.
A bit like what Jacob Collier does.
Exactly what Jacob Collier does. So he makes a choir out of his audience.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely amazing. We're going to go and see Jacob Collier later this year, aren't we?
It's true. He's performing his new album, Jesse 4.
Exactly. And we're going to go and see him in December.
Definitely.
So I'm hoping that he's going to make the audience into a choir like Freddie did all those years ago.
I really hope so.
So then it went from Radio Gaga to what?
Hammer to Fall.
Oh, I love that song as well. That was one of their more recent
and
songs at the time.
If you look at the second verse, he was. If you watch it on YouTube or whatever you watch it on.
Yeah.
You can see him against the camera.
Yeah.
And he was just like...
Oh, he was playing with the camera, wasn't he? He was grabbing the camera.
He was like, this is my moment. Yeah. I'm in charge of the stage. I'm your boss.
Yeah.
Do as I say.
A really charming Freddie Mercury sort of way.
Yeah.
He brought everyone along with him.
Yeah.
He showed the passion of what he wanted to do. It was amazing.
Let's talk after the show.
Okay, well, we haven't got through the show yet. Chill out. We're only at Hammer to Fall.
Okay, so...
What came after Hammer to Fall?
Freddie Mercury played an electric guitar for this one. It was Crazy Little Thing Called Love.
Yeah, he's not much of a guitar player, Freddie. He would admit that.
Yeah.
But then he did that, and then...
The whole world loved it pretty quickly.
Yeah, exactly. The whole world loved it. Then there was what?
Then it was We Will.
So that's the iconic drum intro from Roger. That's not how it goes. Yeah, that's the one. Followed by...
We Are The Champions.
Last song. Yeah. And that's an epic ender. And in fact, Queen often ended with that, even in subsequent
they
tours
did,
as well.
They did God Save the Queen.
They do often do that. And Freddie often comes out wearing a crown and a robe.
Yeah, he did that in 1986.
So that's what happened. So let's talk about what happened after the show then. So firstly, everything went mad in terms of Live Aid and the world stopped and were sort of like spellbound by this incredible performance by Queen.
And they came back to Wembley Stadium 1 year exactly later.
Was it exactly to the day?
Yeah.
Was it really?
13th of July.
So... They went on to have this incredible tour. So the success of their performance at Live Aid, obviously it helped the Live Aid cause. Live Aid went on to make about £150 million and the cause was for the famine in Ethiopia between 83 and 85.
I think it also just didn't help the causes in Ethiopia.
Mm.
I think it also really helped the friendship against Roger Taylor, Brian May, John Deacon and Freddie Mercury.
Do you think they came closer together?
Definitely.
Because off the back of their success of the Live Aid show, they went on to do this tour, the Live Magic Tour,
in 1986. Was so good.
And that was the tour where they did two nights at Wembley Stadium with the iconic yellow jacketed Freddie with the white trousers with the red and yellow stripes
white
string vest underneath. Ooh. And those iconic images of him standing at the front with his hand in the air,
mic in hand,
that was all from that
and
tour.
If you watch,
and they probably would have never done that if it wasn't for Live Aid.
Yeah, and if you watch him playing 70s of Rye on the piano in that concert, he was just playing it with the introduction with one hand and it was like one hand wonder.
Yeah, that's right.
So
Seven Seas of Rye.
Yeah.
With that whole really, really fast piano thing. Yeah. You just did that on the mic. So that's what they went on to do. And then, obviously, very sadly,
yeah, Queen, Freddie died.
Freddie died in 1991. He became ill. I know in the movie it says that he knew he was ill before Live Aid. That's not true.
He was officially diagnosed on...
well, we don't know for sure, but...
Yeah, April 1987 is the estimate.
That's what Jim Hutton, his partner, says. We don't know how true that is, but yeah, it seems like he was diagnosed with HIV in 1987, became gradually more and more unwell, and sadly died on the 24th of November 1991. And I know that date; it is scarred in my mind because I was so sad.
You bought innuendo the year after at his tribute concert.
I did. I remember staying up late to watch his tribute concert in 1992 when I was 10.
Oh, George Michael! That song was so. Amazing. Yeah. I've
Somebody
got
to Love.
I've got that song with my playlist on Spotify.
You have. So that was really cool. And so what happened with Queen between 85 and Freddie's death?
I'm glad you asked. They made three studio albums.
Yeah.
Innuendo, The Miracle, and It's a Kind of Magic.
Okay.
It's a Kind of Magic being the earliest, released in 1986. Then came The Miracle in 1989, which featured hits like The Miracle,
yeah.
Breakthrough, okay. And...
Breakthrough's a banging tune.
Oh, if you watch the music video, they're performing it on the train.
Yeah, that's the one on the train, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so good.
Yeah.
And Innuendo was actually the last album. It was such a good album.
Mm.
You had hits like Show Must Go On, These Are the Days of Our Lives, and Headlong.
Yeah, all good tunes.
Yeah.
All good tunes that we listen to quite a bit in the car and stuff, don't we?
Yeah, Show Must Go On is actually one of my favourite Queen songs.
So I think there were quite a lot of songs like Show Must Go On, These Are the Days of Our Lives, I'm Going Slightly Mad. There's a lot of songs around there which clearly Freddie was writing about his demise.
His death. Yeah,
yeah, his illness and whatnot. And then there was...
If you watch the unofficial video for Show Must Go On, I was saying this to you this morning. He demanded that they didn't do it in black and white like they did for These Are the Days of Our Lives and I'm Going Slightly Mad because he wanted the world... This was his final message to the world.
Mm.
He wanted the world to see him as he really was.
I see. Which video was that?
Show Must Go On, unofficial video.
I thought the last video that he did was These Are the Days of Our Lives.
That was... Actually,
because he was very, very unwell during the recording of that video. And at the end, there's a line in the song.
I still love you.
I still love you. And he just sort of waves his hand and, yeah, blows a kiss and walks off screen, which is amazing. A really sad.
Powerful.
Powerful thing, yeah. And I thought that was the last time Freddie was ever seen.
Yeah, actually, he had one video released the month before he died. And there's a little bit of a myth going around on YouTube saying that he went blind in his last
month. It might not be a myth. It might be true.
It might be true.
AIDS.
I don't think it was true. If you look at the video, he did have red eyes. So I'm not sure if that was his illness or...
Look, you know, we shouldn't talk too much about all that kind of stuff because it was obviously very, very
sad
and difficult and painful, and it was a very awful death. And it was the first time. So when he died, I was 9.
Yeah,
and I remember being absolutely distraught because he was my hero at the time, and I didn't know he was poorly. No one did really. He only announced that he was dying like a few days before he actually died. I think.
Pretty sure the band would have suspected.
Oh, the band would have known, but I mean publicly, out in the open, people didn't know that this was happening. So it came as a shock, and then
especially to you because you were like one of the biggest Queen fans.
I was.
You know, actually, Queen are doing a tour now.
Oh, they're always touring.
Yeah.
They're squeezing that lemon for all it's worth. Roger.
What does that mean?
Well, they're trying to. I mean, I'm sure they enjoy doing it, but they tour relentlessly, making the most of the Queen brand, which is fine, fair enough. It's not really Queen, as far as I'm concerned. It's not got Fred.
Adam Lambert sort of carries that.
He's amazing, but he's not Freddie Mercury.
He kind of carries that Freddie spirit.
Yeah, he does
a little bit, but no one's as good.
How
as
do you
Freddie
replace
Mercury?
The best frontman of all time?
Again, no pressure.
You can't. It's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go. That's Live Aid, 1985. Anything else you want to add?
Well, if we look at Freddie Mercury's final video, you can see how sad he was that he was dying and how much he would miss everybody.
Yeah, it was really sad, wasn't it?
So sad. And
but we at least, you know, now we've got all these Queen videos and we've got all this Queen music that we can still listen to. And what an amazing legacy. Can you imagine if everybody got to have a legacy like that and be remembered for the rest of
Queen
time?
Queen lasted, their first video, their first album was in about 71.
Yeah, and they went through to 1991.
So
in fact, they're still going. So, you know, it's an amazing
20
thing.
20 main years.
It's amazing what they achieved. One of the biggest bands ever. And an absolutely iconic concert. There's no question about it.
No question.
So,
best concert of all time.
You reckon?
Definitely reckon.
Oh, well, we started on a high. It can only go downhill from here then, Isaac.
Oh, definitely.
So we're gonna do some more of these podcasts. We don't know if anyone's going to listen. We don't really care, do we? Because we're having fun doing it anyway.
No. Our next episodes are going to feature...
So give us some examples of some of the concerts we're going to cover.
Eric Clapton, Unplugged.
Oh, good one.
Nirvana in London, 1992.
Reading. Reading Festival.
Yeah, and we're going to get James Sills, a very special guest.
Well, we haven't asked him yet.
We might get him on our podcast.
Yeah.
And
to come and talk about it. We might have some special guests talking about things.
We might do the Beatles at Shea Stadium.
I think if we do the Beatles, we should do the rooftop gig.
Oh, we have to do the rooftop gig.
Because the Shea Stadium one was a bit of a disaster.
It was.
To hear them.
I think
they
had...
stopped them. That was the last time they performed live for 6 years or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It was iconic, it wasn't...
In a bad way.
It was iconic in a bad way. Whereas the rooftop... That's just iconic.
Yeah.
So we should do that. I think we should do David Bowie potentially at Glastonbury in 2000.
Oh.
Iconic. I think we should maybe do Metallica with the symphony orchestra in Los Angeles. Mm. We had a long list, didn't we? I forgot. Radiohead's got to be in there.
Radiohead Glastonbury 1997.
Yeah, that's the one with the mud. So there's loads of ideas. But, you know, if anybody has any suggestions and is listening, then you can't contact us because we haven't got an email address yet. Oh, I forgot to do that. I'm going to set up an email address. And next time we do it, we can put out our email address, and anyone who's got any suggestions of which gigs we should talk about, then they can send us an email. Sound like a plan?
Thank you for listening to this podcast.
And what's the podcast called?
The Great Gigs That Changed the World. It was produced by Jackson Burkett.
Say hello, Jax.
Hi.
Jackson, age 7, is our producer in the background. Isaac, age 10, is our co-presenter. I'm Adam, age 42. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next time.